Ms. McClure, good morning to you. Before you begin, let me make sure, Ms. Blezen, you are here this morning also. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Then Ms. McClure, you may proceed.
Thank you. If it pleases the court, opposing counsel, my name is Angelica McClure. I'm here representing the defendant, Mary Fernandez. I was not trial counsel in this case. I am only appellate counsel. Therefore, we raised two main issues on the appeal. One of those is ineffective assistance of counsel. The second is an error in regards to jury instruction number 13 and the amended verdict form that was presented to the jury. Unless the justices have any questions, I do not intend to address the issue of ineffective assistance of counsel. Those issues were raised purely because I was not trial counsel and we wanted to make sure to preserve those. Our main issue is our number two, which is that the trial court erred in the wording of jury instruction number 13 and the amended verdict form. Jury instruction number 13 came about halfway through jury deliberations when the jury sent out a question to the court. That question was in regards to, well, let me back up. This was a theft case. The allegations in this case were in regards to theft. The jury sent out a question asking what if they could not come to a determination in regards to the value of that theft. The original jury verdict form had a blank for the jury to fill in that was for the specific amount that they found was involved in the theft or was part of that theft. After the jury sent out that question, over defense counsel's objection, the court issued jury instruction number 13 and changed the jury verdict form.
Was the objection to the fact that the jury instruction was being changed, or was the objection to the new language, the language of the amended instruction?
I believe it was to the amended sheet that was going to.
So the language that was being brought in, not necessarily the procedure.
Yeah, I would say that was fair. I mean, they weren't trial counsel wasn't objecting, saying that that it was a misstatement of the law, because the new jury instruction was still saying that a unanimous verdict had to be reached. What they were objecting to was the change from having to have a specific amount that the jury was determining in regards to that theft and changing it to the current jury verdict form that allowed the jury to circle a range of values for that theft.
Isn't that the exact approach that the verdict form and the jury instructions we discussed in State v. Dixon, that 2020 case, isn't that precisely the approach the court took there?
It is. I think it's the fact that it changed partway through. I think if it would have started with that verdict form and that was what the jury had been told, it was the fact that after they had come out basically saying that they were unable to reach a verdict or a unanimous decision in regards to that amount, at that point, then it was changed, which basically it seemed to send a message to the jury that they did not need to be unanimous in what that amount was, that instead they could decide on that range. I understand those ranges are what is in the statute in regards to whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony, but
where does the requirement that the jury be unanimous as to a specific value come from? What's the legal basis?
So in Nebraska Revised Statute 28518-8, it requires that a specific value of the theft must be determined. That's specifically for purposes of punishment. There doesn't have to be a specific value to determine that a theft occurred, but in terms of fairness and due process to both the defendant as well as the victim, it requires that there be a specific value amount.
So is your concern that
number 13, whether or not a correct statement of the law confused the jury. They were sent in there to find a number, and then there was this revised one that says a range will do.
Yes, I think it sent a message to the jury that the unanimous verdict was not required, as long as they could get within a ballpark or a range, or agree to that a theft had occurred.
So is that seen as yes or no, or maybe so, right? Urging them to come to a verdict.
Correct. I think from the evidence that it's clear, and Ms. Fernandez even admitted to some of that money that was taken. I think the value, it really comes down to the value of what the jury believed the value of was missing. And there's huge discrepancies within the record in regards to what that amount is or what that could be. And because of the range that was given, it's a huge range. It's 1,500 to 5,000.
Didn't the instruction require that the jury be unanimous that the theft was at least $1,500?
I believe that it did, but it also goes up to 5,000. And so
sure,
I,
but if one juror is at 1,500 and another is at 4,500, they were unanimous that it was at least 1,500, correct?
I guess theoretically, yes. I think the problem is we don't know, because there's not a value that was put down that we don't know. Someone could have been at 1,400 and said, well, I agree, it's close enough to that range. You guys all think that it's within that range. And so they just go with that range because it's close.
That juror wouldn't be following the instruction then, right?
Correct. But I think that happens a lot. And I think that when we see, I think when they're given that leeway and that wiggle room, that when they're seeing that it's not a specific amount that they have to come up with. But
counsel, you were asked before, what is the source, the legal source of your argument that there is a requirement of a specific number? And you, in response, alluded to section 28518, subsection 8. Don't you agree that that subsection does not use the word specific or any other similar qualifier in requiring that value is an essential element of the offense?
It does not. It does not have a qualifier word.
So specific. And to be fair to you and your client, you're really relying upon a comment to the pattern jury instruction, aren't you?
Correct. Yes. Under the comment to jury instruction 3.6 requires that the jury state in the verdict that the precise value of the property was that was taken.
You understand that comments to the jury instructions are not law in this state, don't you?
I do understand that it's not law, but I believe that it is guidance towards the court as well as the parties in regards to procedure and what the court had in mind in regards to procedure. And I think that their rationale for why they have that was because of the restitution decision and potential sentencing decisions that the court would have to make following the verdict.
There was no restitution imposed in this case, was there?
There was not. And I believe that part of that was due to the fact that there was no value that was decided.
And your client was not harmed by there being no restitution ordered, was she?
Not in terms of restitution. I believe that my client is not the only one to consider, though. Even though I represent the defendant, I think the victim also has to be considered. And if this becomes routine, then and there's no determination as to restitution or as to a value, then restitution will not be available for victims.
It's part of your argument seemed to allude to the timing of the events. Had the instructions initially provided for the instruction number 13, essentially saying what it did, but just going on beyond determination of value, had that language and the original verdict form, which I don't find in our record. Do you agree it's not in the record?
I would agree.
And the alternative jury instruction form were provided at the outset.
would there have been error other than what you're talking about as to the content? The timing, in other words, my question is aimed at a potential concession that timing really doesn't have anything to do with the issue that you're ultimately relying on.
Probably not. I guess it's hard to say under that hypothetical. I don't know. I guess I haven't thought about it in that regard. I think the timing issue is the change in the impression to the jury in regards to how much in agreement they need to be or how specific they have to be in regards to their unanimous verdict. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Blessin, good morning to you.
May it please the court, I'm Taryn Blessin, Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. This is Ms. Fernandez's direct appeal of her conviction for theft by deception, over $1,500 but less than $5,000, a class 4 felony. There are two issues on appeal. As my co-counsel did, I will focus on the jury instruction issue and will briefly address the ineffective assistance of counsel claim if time permits. Ms. Fernandez takes issue with allowing the jury to decide on the range of the property stolen as opposed to filling in a specific value and believes that instruction number 13 conflicts with instruction number 3. It's the state's position that the wording of instruction number 13 was a correct statement of the law, was not inconsistent with any other instruction, and the district court's actions were proper. The law is well settled that it is the appellant's burden to show that a question instruction was prejudicial and there is no prejudice if the instructions read together and taken as a whole correctly state the law and are not misleading.
So I beg your pardon to interrupt here, but I think Justice Castle and I are kind of exploring or trying to zero in on the nature of what's in front of us, mm-hmm. which is this a problem with the language of number 13 or the process by which the jury was told number 13 is controlling?
Or not a problem at all.
Or not a problem at all.
The objection at the jury conference where they were talking about the proposed instruction was to the language of the instruction and not the process. So I would say that the process of how the jury instruction was changed is not raised on appeal. And it wasn't preserved because they did not move for mistrial based on the procedure. So I feel like the procedure is not an issue on appeal. It's the language of the instruction that the appellant has an issue with. And it's the state's position that the language is proper and proper statement of the law. As I said, the wording of instruction number 13 correctly stated the law. It instructed the jury to make a unanimous decision as to the value. And it just gave them a option to pick a range of the value, and the range was consistent. The ranges provided were consistent with the grading of theft offenses in section 28.518. The court has found that the value of the property stolen is now an essential element of a theft offense, but prejudice has not been found in the fact that a specific value was not determined by a jury, so long as the prosecution proved beyond a reasonable doubt that the property's value was over the threshold amount of the range. Here, Ms. Fernandez admitted to using Ms. Rodriguez's card for over $2,000 worth of ATM withdrawals and purchases, and over $1,600 of that was confirmed by surveillance video. So it's very clear here that the state proved beyond a reasonable doubt that over $1,500 was proven, was taken, and that's the threshold amount of the range that chosen by the jury unanimously. To the extent that she argues her right to a unanimous jury verdict was violated, after the jury verdict was read, all 12 jurors raised their hand and indicated that that was their verdict. It's the state's position that instruction number 13 does not conflict with instruction number 3, because instruction 3 generally required the jury to decide the value of property, and instruction 13 just provided a means of the jury to decide that value by allowing it to select a range rather than a specific amount. To the extent that she's arguing that the district court was wrong in amending the jury verdict form after deliberations had already begun, it's the state's position that this was not an error. A trial court is authorized to give additional instructions after the jury has begun deliberations. A verdict form is treated as part of the jury instructions, as the two are meant to be read in conjunction. And as Justice Stacey pointed out, this is the same verdict form that was used in State versus Dixon, and that was not considered an issue in that case.
Does the record tell us whether the jury still had the original verdict form, which we don't have in our record, as well as the form that they actually returned, which we do have in our record? or not? Is it just silent?
The record does not say whether they had the original jury verdict form or whether that was taken and given and the amended version was given.
What change occurred?
The record is not clear, but it's, I guess, implied from the addition of instruction 13 that the original jury verdict form would have stopped at the check mark where they have to say guilty of theft offense in the amount of blank. And then the ranges that were added to it is what I assume from what instruction 13 instructed, that was the only thing that was added. So I don't think anything was taken from the original verdict form. It was simply just added to, but that's not in our record.
But that's the original form is not in the record.
The original form is not in the record. Okay.
Is there a dispute what the contents were?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Was this an Allen charge? The jury said we're having trouble. Judge said go back, do better. Or did the judge just say, whoops, here's a better form?
I think it was the jury just asking for clarification on, okay, like I think the jury question made it sound like, okay, we've unanimously decided that she's guilty of a theft offense. We're just maybe disagreeing on the value. So do we need to come to a unanimous decision there? The judge, I think, was very clear that yes, you have to be unanimous as to a value, but to assist you, you can choose from, here's the ranges provided in the statute, and you can choose a range.
So ultimately, you have to be unanimous on a range.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What's your response to the argument about the effect of such instructions and verdicts upon restitution in other cases, bearing in mind that no restitution was ordered in this case?
Right. So I would agree. Yeah, restitution isn't an issue here, but if the court were to consider it, I would say that it's not of consequence that a jury did not find a specific value here for restitution, because our statutes say that a sentencing court is responsible for determining that, and they hold a separate hearing at sentencing to determine what restitution would be. So I feel like the jury finding wouldn't have any bearing on that anyway.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions on the jury instruction issue, I'll just briefly cover her ineffective assistance of counsel claim. I don't believe that her assignment of error here satisfies Mirza and its progeny. This court has repeatedly stated, most recently in Miranda just last week, that an appellate court will not scour the argument section of a brief to extract specific allegations of deficient performance. Here, the court must scour the appellant's brief because a claim that counsel failed to present documents and witnesses is too general to meet the specificity requirement of Mirza, as it does not make specific allegations of conduct the appellant claims constitutes deficient performance. Even if the assignment was sufficiently alleged, there appear to be 7 different claims in her argument section, and the state submits that all of those claims can be disposed of on direct appeal. Each of those claims were discussed in my brief, and unless there are specific questions, I would just issue. I would submit those issues on the briefs. Unless there are further questions, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. Thank you very much. That concludes arguments then in State versus Fernandez, and you are excused. Next case of the day then is State versus Muratella.